I mean, I am old, and I've done this for, oh my God, over 50 years, haven't I? And there really are no artists. There's people that paint, and what they paint is what they're helping becomes of interest to a potential collector or buyer. Now, myself, I've always dismissed potential collectors and buyers and considered them unimportant things, even though they are important, just like people that donate to public radio, you know, quite important, aren't they? You know,
absolutely.
Without that, you know, they'd have a uniform on and we'd be waiting for our rice in line. But anyway, with underwear, because it'd be government issued. But anyway, you know, I've never been concerned with the sales end of it, nor the computerization end of it. 30-some-odd years ago, and the emergence of the electronic media, I'd been approached by a couple of very, like, high street type galleries. You know, we want to do this, we want to do that. And I just truly did not see it for what it would become, you know. I was more focused on things like an empty park bench, right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's just like the subject of most of your paintings are really very simple everyday objects, like a window, a chair, a jar of jam.
Right, yeah. More basic than that is the thing that I came to terms with, 35 years ago, is that the most important things are the things that are most overlooked, mm-hmm. obscure. And it's like, you know, it's difficult to really find things that are completely dismissed in your everyday life. But provide such functional utilitarianism. What I paint, the only things I paint are unimportant items in an attempt to get the viewer to re-examine things they see. A coffee cup, you know, mm-hmm. A toothbrush. I've never done a toothbrush, and I've always struggled for years. How do you present a toothbrush, you know? Someone else has got to figure that one out. Things that melt intrigue me. So a very dismissed object would be a Ben & Jerry's ice cream cone, which I did a piece about single scoop melting. And I think that, and it's one piece I've never allowed to be sold at any of the galleries before, a single scoop melting. I actually have that at my home, along with Tesco mixed jam, which I think is probably for those series a good point to stop. And having have gone through a period of difficulties with substances. I know Alexander Salazar had a piece as sugar cube melting, mm-hmm. Which kind of went with that whole era of my life and things like that, you know, which of course I don't do anymore. And I haven't for years. I'm really just kind of a tired old guy, aren't I? Pretty boring, you know.
Your mother was the one who first recognized your talent, right?
Right, yeah.
And what did she do about it?
My mom was very connected with the Milan social structure and all that. Galleries, theater.
Is that where she's from?
Right, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. My dad was a German former military guy. We kind of leave it at that. And my mom was a blonde Italian Jew that did not practice Judaism.
So she was ethnically Jewish, but not religiously.
They were very free-spirited, you know. The London Art Review had kind of like looked into years and years ago, like 35 years ago, looked into my childhood and things like that, and came up with some things about my dad, you know, which were sensitive at that time still, having been on the other side. You know, she saw in me what she had seen in my dad when my dad was still alive, you know, and so got me to, like, draw and paint and stuff like that. And I actually ended up selling my first piece when I was 13 years old.
Wow.
To a design group in Milan that my mom knew the principals, but she said, hey, look at this, you know. And they went, oh, that's, you know, nice, isn't it, you know. Let's put a price on that, you know. So it just went from there, you know. I'm an architect by education. And I've never practiced or joined a firm. You know, I've, you know, reconstructed my home in England. But I do think that enabled me to see things three-dimensionally. Because architects can look at a building and they can literally see, the successful ones can see where the supports are and where that force is going to come down that needs to be transgressed into the pylons or whatever you're doing.
And that works its way into your paintings?
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure in some way it has, you know.
You know, you say that your stuff is simple, but it's simple in the way that poetry is simple. It may be simple in the subject matter, but I think it says so much. When you look at any of your paintings, it's just like poems. They may be just a few words, maybe something simple, but it tells you a lot. I mean, it does to me. When I look at your work, like the shoes, the tractor in the field, the English green wall with the chair. I mean, anything that I look at that you do, the windows, the Tesco series. I see so much more than just at that object, because it just says a whole lot more to me. I'm not an art critic or anything, but just my spirit, it says a lot more to me.
Well, you know, with art, you know, people always go, you know, you should buy what you like. Well, that's not right. They're completely wrong. I don't know why people continually go back to that. Because it's such a misnomer. It's false information. You need to buy things possibly that you don't like, but that you question. This kind of came about. There was a gentleman at a gallery, some opening years ago in Amsterdam, which has always been one of my favorite galleries I show at. And Old Spiegelstraat, you know, is a real magic. It's one of those rare magical streets. But anyway, this guy was so upset and went on and on and on to tell me what was wrong with this painting. I mean, you know, I mean, I think it was an old olive urn or something like that. Yeah, it was an olive urn on bench or table. It was so long ago, sorry. Well, the guy ended up buying it, didn't he? Yeah. You know, not there, the show, you know. I mean, the guy caused a bloody scene, you know. I mean, I don't care. But Millie rang me in London like I think 2 weeks time later and said he couldn't get it out of his mind. Okay, so that's what art is supposed to do. It's supposed to make you think. So he bought it, you know. And she said she didn't flex at all on pricing because he was so nasty about the whole thing, you know. And I said, yeah, well, that's why I've got you, Millie, you know. So anyway, yeah, so, I mean, I did spend a great deal of time thinking about that. And I realized, well, you know, that guy's right on. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this makes him... You know, why do you put, you know, purple and green together? I mean, that's stupid. You know, this form's just, you know, wrong. It's out of balance with, you know. Yeah, no, I want my things out of balance. I want my things hugging an edge. I want my things spilling over because I want the viewer to be uncomfortable. You know, there's no good art, there's no bad art. You know, you should never buy art because you like it. Quite the opposite, I think you should possibly buy art because you really are uncomfortable with it, you know. Most people buy decorative art. And there's nothing wrong with decorative art. And I'm not saying that, you know, people that do decorative art, you know, should be institutionalized or anything. probably the only ones that have television shows Saturday morning competing with cartoon shows should be institutionalized. But anyway, but I've been institutionalized, CC. I can say that. Okay. You know, I have had some issues in my life that I've had to rely on professional help. And they're a whole more screwed up than I am, but that's another story. The most important thing, I think, is, you know, truly, I mean, the artist that I've have come in passing with during my life are usually very egotistically based people, which I find very uninteresting. Now, you know, it's an artist's responsibility, be it poetry or be it, you know, painting or be it sculpture, whatever, you know, to be the uncensored voice. And that's why it is important to have here in America venues like NPR and things like that.
So tell me, the French crayon. Mm-hmm. You're the only one who does that I know of. How did that come about?
Well, I'm sure there's been other people that have done it. You know, I isolate myself from other artists. You know, Michael Fitzwater is the exception. Patrick Ming's the exception. Jan Kaspersky is a friend of mine. He's passed out. And I do that because I don't want other artists' influences to influence what I'm doing, because no matter what you say, I mean, Andy Warhol was brilliant about it, you know. I mean, he just went, yeah, that's what it's all about, duplicating each other's works and stuff. And, I mean, he was a god to me, you know. I mean, but anyway, I won't even go into that whole thing. The question of the line. So... after years and years and years, I started fracturing lines on pieces prior to the crayon. And the London Art Review and the Dice of Terror and all these critic guys' deals, they couldn't figure out how I did it. And I said, well, you know, paint for 50 years. I mean, you know, it's like... I'm not painting oranges here, am I? You know? So, I don't know. One day I started to put very fine lines over something, and then I realized by doing certain things, I could fracture these, which greatly increased the dynamics I felt of a piece. So I started to look at what I was doing, and I realized all the paintbrushes is a real thick line, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And that all little tiny fine line is just another line. And so it's interweaving lines that have opposite effects. Then together with the translucency, which I have to always have because of the building of layers over forms and things like that, you start looking at it, you start going, okay, well, really, what we've got here is we just got a lot of lines, okay? And some of these lines take on an eventual dynamic, hopefully, of a form that is enticing to the viewer and will make them possibly think about the subject matter, be it a tractor, be it a coffee cup, be it a lipstick, whatever. And so, you know, by posturing that, you know, the antithesis actually to me would be, at what point does a line become a form? Or is it a form of itself? Mm-hmm. Does it have to be connected? Does it have to be straight? It's kind of a Rashomon thing where everybody kind of sees it in their own way, even though everybody's seeing it the same way, you know, which of course is one of my favorite 30-minute movies of all time. The question of line, so that's kind of it. I mean, it's an integral component, the fracturing of the lines and things like that, which, you know, once again, like a single scoop melting. And so that evolved into the use of the French crayon that I use. I'm sure there's hundreds of other artists that have done it, okay? The people that cover my art, the London Art Review and Esoterre and all these places, they, you know, talk about it's a fresh departure. But you see, if all you had was scribble, I mean, it'd be just nothing, wouldn't it? Yeah. You know, I mean, it's got to be like, you know, Tesco mixed jam, where that actually, I had done that piece a week's time after I found out how seriously ill I was. And the doctors kept calling, going, you know, are you like, is this a denial? I'm going, no, I understand. I get what you said. I said, I've just got other things to do. So thanks so much for calling. Bye. I don't know if it was the Tate or what. Had photographed the piece and, you know, obviously they didn't process the it immediately. I'm not that important, you know. And several weeks later, I get a ring from this guy, you know. And he goes, you know, we were like digitally going through your piece layer by layer. And he goes, we found this message. Is it true? And I said, oh, yeah. You know, I mean, you know, there's a timetable here if you listen to these people and things like that. And so, you know, immediately they wanted to acquire that piece. And I said, no, I don't think so. I think I'm going to keep that over my bed for just a short period of time. You know, the girls like it. And as long as the girls like it, then that's all that really matters, isn't it? And, you know, because I just kind of, it's like big time wrestling, you know, I just kind of come in and then I leave, you know. So anyway, yeah, so that's the use of the crayon came about. You know, it's all an antithesis, you know, it's a thesis, antithesis, all that. You know, one thing leads to another, that's all it is. It's just how, if being a painter, you deal with those things, if you dismiss them or what. Because of my health and things like that, you know, it's a, that's what I'm looking at now, how to stop, you know, but at what point to stop. So the final series won't be released until after I've passed, and it's going to be unfinished works, and I think, you know, that's pretty cool, you know, I mean, you know, I'm done, okay, so I'll be departing. So I wanted to leave something behind that really kind of evokes the necessity of engagement between the viewer and whatever's hanging on the wall. So none of the works will be entirely finished. And my hope is that people will look at these and go, yeah, okay, but what is missing? You know, so they go back into the electronic media archive, which, of course, you know, I miss completely. and, you know, find older works and say, okay, this is similar here, you know, possibly this. But that's what it's all about. The you know, this, my stuff's so simple. You know, I don't want people to make them complex, and that's why I write on the back of them. Mm-hmm. Why I did it, and what I want them to goddamn do is to think about it, you know. You know, you guys are getting Old Red Tractor in Field, which was a work from the O'Brien farm in Ireland, which they're gracious enough to always let me wander about and everything. And they've got these relic old things, you know. The forgotten things are just as important as overlooked things.
Yes.
I've got so many good ideas that I've never really done anything about. And with age, you know, and it's not like the old days when I could have, like, you know, literally 10 pieces going in the studio in London at one time. You know, now it's like they prop me up in front of like one piece and say, try to finish it. Alexander's on the phone wanting to know when it's done, you know. You know. Anyway.
That's the gallery owner at White Box Contemporary.
Right, yeah, here in America, right, yeah. Alexander Salazar has represented me here in the United States for years, and has, from what I understand, still has a collective that he's kind of held back, which all the gallery owners are doing right now, and I understand that. You know, I mean, that's what they're all about. You know, they're not painting themselves. I mean, they represent artists and things like that. And, you know, with the news, I mean, why sell it now when, you know, we can wait till the guy's dead and then we can, like, get some, like, you know, proper money for it, can we?
Jeez.
You know, so, yeah. But there's pieces, you know, that the girls will have and my son will get and things like that. But then my own website here in America, has got the most awful name you could possibly name a website. It's so self-centered. Paul Klein Uber Sales. I mean, you know, do you want to buy a Ford or do you want to buy... Isn't that horrible?
Oh, Chrysler.
Yeah. So the girls have got, and anything that does sell on that, you know, goes into the trust for the family and things like that, you know.
I don't know if you want to do any name dropping in terms of...
No.
Like, no. Okay.
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm. No, I never do that. You know, it's like, you know, at gallery openings and things like that, you know, people show up, individuals show up, you know, and then people go, oh, my God, they own your stuff. And I go, yeah, they have for a long time. You know, all I can say is that I've been very, very fortunate with, you know, celebrities and musicians and museums and collectives and archives and stuff like that. I've been very fortunate, you know. But I think the common thread there is I'm probably not the only, but probably one of the extremely few in the world that has dedicated their entire career to unnoticed things. Mm-hmm.